We're so pleased you could join us tonight. It's the mission of Women in Recovery to create a caring community that provides education, spiritual insight, and growth opportunities for women in 12-step recovery programs. We come together to learn and grow around issues that universally affect us all. Note, this is not a 12-step meeting, nor is it a replacement for a 12-step program. If you'd like to learn more about Women in Recovery and upcoming programs, please see the retreat's website or Women in Recovery's Facebook page. Both of those links are being placed in the chat. We have a couple of quick announcements. Women in Recovery has a book group. The book group meets virtually every second Thursday of each month. The book group next meets on Thursday, April 14th at 6:30 to discuss ordinary recovery, mindfulness, addiction, and the path of lifelong sobriety. Visit WIR's website for updates on that and further books after May. Do feel free to attend the book club, whether or not you've read the book. It's always a rich discussion. You can also email questions or comments about the book club to Peg at wir@theretreat.org. And that'll be placed in the chat. We have a listserv if you'd like to receive monthly WIR emails. Please write your name and email in the chat to be added to the listserv. We do need first and last names for that. So if you are comfortable, please write it in the chat or privately chat one of the women here who has WIR next to their name, and they'll contact you directly to get your information. For those of you who attended our in-person speaker nights, you may recall we would pass a basket to help cover expenses. In that spirit, there's now a donate button on WIR's page on the retreat's website. As with in-person meetings, no contribution is necessary. We are appreciative of any and all contributions. Service work. If you're interested in learning more about service opportunities with WIR, please let us know in the chat. At this time, the program committee, the committee that works on these speaker nights, as well as the marketing committee, have openings. And now let's get started with tonight's presentation. Women in Recovery is so pleased to welcome Ellie Hyatt. Ellie will talk about self-compassion as a caring force. When in balance, self-compassion involves tenderness and fierceness. She will describe the three foundations of self-compassion and explore the fierce aspect of self-compassion as a source of protection and self-respect. As women, we have been socialized to be nice and not get angry. We will learn practices that allow us to keep our hearts open and protect ourselves forcefully. Goals for this session are increased awareness of our own relationship with self-compassion, understanding fierce self-compassion as a source of protection, and awareness of destructive and constructive anger. Ellie is the former director of Family and Spiritual Recovery at the retreat. Before joining the retreat staff, Ellie was an independent businesswoman, a social worker, and worked with the state of Minnesota developing programs and writing legislation. She is a certified spiritual director, a trained teacher of self-compassion, and has been an active participant in 12-step recovery since 1993. Ellie has significant experience organizing retreats and conferences. Welcome, Ellie. I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Susan. So happy and grateful to be here tonight. And I appreciated that moment of silence to ground us. And what I like to do is just offer the set-aside prayer. It might mostly be for me, but it might be helpful to everyone. Loving Creator, please help me set aside everything I think I know about recovery, life, and you, so I can be open to a new experience. I always have an agenda. I always have a list of things I'm going to talk about. And what often happens, even in a Zoom meeting, is the energy of you all somehow impacts kind of how the session goes. So I'm looking forward to see how we do together. I am in 12-step recovery. That's the foundation of all of my training. Those are women in recovery are especially people who have a place in my heart that I want to work with and support and grow with. And I have been trained in self-compassion. I have a lot of information. What I noticed about my own life is all those years where I was reading books and gathering information, I was just getting more and more unhappy. And I figured out after many, many years is there was no practice component to all of this wonderful information. And it became very clear that information by itself does not change behavior. And so I always include some opportunities whenever I am with people to put into practice some of what I'm talking about. So I will invite you at different times to consider a practice. It did say in the goals, I appreciate you reminding me of those, Susan, you know, that we will be getting some practices tonight. So one of the things that I always want to do with the topic, and the topic is fear self-compassion, is to link that to the 12 steps. And for me, it's pretty easy to do. The first link that I think of with the 12 steps in self-compassion is step two. Came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And my understanding of insanity that's my go-to on a regular basis is my insanity is I'm telling myself things that aren't true. So if I am not treating myself with kindness, if I am not caring for myself, if I am telling myself there's something wrong with me, that's not true. That would be a step two issue. And then, of course, we get to step 10, which is we're taking daily inventory. And daily inventory for me involves being aware of what I'm thinking, what I'm experiencing, how I'm acting. And without some practice to do that, then I'm pretty much just going on autopilot, and I'm pretty much going unconscious most of the time. Because we live in these human bodies, and I don't have this in my notes, but maybe the most important thing I can remember to say and to share is that my belief is that we are all, in our essence, spiritual beings, and we're having this messy human experience. And part of this human experience is we live in a physical body, and the physical body is wired to keep us safe. And so the unconscious radar that's always on in our nervous system is designed to see what's wrong. That I'm sure you've heard of the fight, flight, or freeze part of our nervous system. If I'm not conscious of what I am thinking or what I am feeling, then my unconscious is just basically running my day. And I believe that we are always practicing something. And if I'm not conscious of what I'm practicing, the result often is some version of there's something wrong with me or something wrong, period. So here we go with self-compassion. Self-compassion, just the basic mindful self-compassion course, is an 8-week course, couple hours a week. So I'm going to skim over a lot of information. I'm going to hold this up while I'm thinking of it. I don't even know if you can see it, but it's Kristen Neff's. It's a workbook. If you haven't gotten this, I highly recommend it. The Mindful Self-Compassion Workbook, it gives you a practice, a way to put into practice what I'm going to skim over tonight. So I got introduced to Kristen Neff when I was still working at the retreat. She was giving a talk at the University of Minnesota, the Center for Spirituality. And I knew when I heard that talk, and by then I had maybe 15 years of recovery as an Al-Anon member in my experience. But I knew when I heard the talk on self-compassion that that was a piece of my recovery journey that would benefit from some attention. Let's just say that my relationship with myself could needed some more care. And I remember when I first started to talk about this subject, and I'm mostly talking to people in recovery, I got some feedback, some pushback, really, from some people I'm in relationship with because it's easy to think the word self. You know, we often confuse the word self, I think, with ego. And, you know, well, no, I'm not supposed to be paying attention to myself. Well, as I said, we're a spiritual being. That's the self with a capital S. And yes, we are also a human being with an ego, with a self with a small s. So we're talking about the spiritual self, the capital S self. And then as women, but I think as people in our culture, we have a lot of myths around why we really, it's not shouldn't be kind to ourselves, but really it's maybe not necessarily a positive thing to be kind to ourselves because it's selfish. I love that this work has been put together by Kristen Neff, who is a researcher. And when she first started to come up with this practice, there was not a lot of research or attention paid to self-compassion. Now there are many, many, many thousands of studies that have been done. And what they find when they study people who practice self-compassion, and I'm going to define it any minute now, but when we practice self-compassion, we're more caring and supportive. It's the opposite of what you might think would happen. When I care for that part of me that is struggling, it allows me to be more caring and supportive of others. And then we live in a pull yourself up by your bootstrap culture. And you know, it might be weak, even for women, although I think that this is maybe more true for people that are in a body that identify themselves as the male gender. People who practice self-compassion are more resilient. Again, the opposite of what we might unconsciously think would happen or might be an unconscious barrier. And a lot of this session tonight is just possibly to gather information about your own relationship to how kind am I to myself and what gets in the way of that. It might be, yeah, been taught it's selfish. I might have been thinking it's weak. I think one that resonates with a lot of us is motivation, that if I don't judge myself, if I don't tell myself I should be different, I should be better, if something needs to be changed in me, then I won't persist. And again, the research that's been done on people who practice self-compassion is people who practice self-compassion are more persistent, more able to move beyond things not going their way. So if those are things that you might have unconsciously thought about as something that could get in the way for practicing, the evidence is there that self-compassion actually is going to help us be more resilient, supportive, caring, and persistent. So self-compassion by Kristen Neff, I'm going to give you her definition and the components, the three components that consider it or she considers to make it up. And then I'm going to translate it into recovery language. And when I do that, I will put that one up on the screen. So the three components are mindfulness. Mindfulness is just simply being present to what we're experiencing right now. Not reacting, not judging, but just being present. And mindfulness is the doorway into any of these practices. If I'm not aware of what I'm thinking or experiencing, then I'm unconscious and my unconscious radar is usually thinking I need to do something to protect myself. So mindfulness. The second component is common humanity. I'm gonna spend a fair amount of time actually on the first two components and then we will get into the last one. Common humanity is seeing ourselves as part of the larger human experience. Again, accepting the imperfection of the human condition. Accepting that I'm born into a body with a nervous system that's designed to keep me safe, that's always looking for what's wrong. When that part of me gets activated, the challenge is I get disconnected from my prefrontal cortex. I get disconnected from rational thought when I am in fight, flight, or freeze. You don't have a choice about that. If I don't have some mindfulness practice, some awareness practice that allows me to create that space between what I'm experiencing and my reaction or my response, then I'm going to react out of fear, I'm going to fight, or I'm going to shut down. So creating that space is what the mindfulness practice gives us. The Big Book uses, this is, if you've ever been in a meeting with me, you know my favorite word in the Big Book is pause. Pause. Practice awareness until spirit emerges. If I don't have a practice that creates that space, then I'm run by my unconscious. And how you know if that part of you is active, if you're in self-criticism, you're in fight. That part of you in your nervous system has been activated. Self-criticism. If you're in flight, self-isolation. And if you're in freeze, self-absorption. These are all very familiar experiences, way of being, if you will. And that self-criticism, self-isolation, self-absorption, those are all small s. Common humanity, it helped me so much to understand there's not something wrong with me. It's just part of my human design that I unconsciously look for what's wrong. That allowed me a lot of slack in my own experience with myself. So mindfulness, common humanity, we all are in this body. We all have imperfections. We are part of a larger human experience. And then the third component is self-kindness, treating ourselves with care and comfort. And I can tell you, when I got introduced to this, if I had anything on the list of self-kindness, it was a very short list. So the first thing we're going to practice is an awareness practice, a mindfulness practice that will give you an opportunity just to look at your own relationship with yourself and self-compassion. This is an invitation. I'm going to ask you some questions. And, you know, if we were together in a room and we had a lot more time, you would write down the answer to these questions. We're not even going to have time to process the questions until we maybe get to the chat. So if a couple of things come up at the end of this practice, you know, might want to bring them to the group, because what I find is we are so much more alike than we're different, that whatever you're thinking that is unique to you, if you say it out loud to one of us, it's like probably most of us will nod our head. So let me put the definition up first that I use in recovery terms for the three parts of self-compassion. Mindfulness, I call awareness, knowledge and understanding that something is happening or exists. Acceptance is common humanity. Ask what happened to me instead of what's wrong with me. For me, is such an incredibly important question. The acceptance is, I have the human condition. I'm wired to look for what's wrong. That does not mean I'm defective. It does not mean I should be different. It does not mean there's something wrong with me. It means I'm in a human body. An action, movement as opposed to rest, a process or condition of acting. What do I need to do to care for myself? There's the self-kindness. So that's how I've been taught the three A's in recovery, is awareness, acceptance, action. It's the same in my view, in my practice, is mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness, if that makes sense. So I'll leave that. Now I'm going to take that down because I want you to just be present to this practice. And this, again, is a practice just to give you some information about where you are with your own relationship with self-compassion. I'm actually going to ask you four questions. I'll just give you a moment to pause to think about this, if this is something that you want to experiment with. So the first question is to think about a time when a close friend, someone that you care about, someone that you have a supportive relationship with, is struggling. And you're the person they come to when they're looking for support. So you might have, it might be somebody that's on the screen, it might be somebody that's in the room with you, or if you're sitting one of the women at the retreat right now. But somebody that you care about, someone that you're close to, is struggling right now, and they've come to you for support. What are the kinds of things that you say to someone who is struggling when you want to offer them some support? So just take a moment and let those arise. We all have things that we know to offer to each other as ways to care for each other. What are the things we say to someone we care about when they're struggling, when we want to offer them support, encouragement, comfort? So hopefully a couple of things have come into your awareness. Now the question is, think about times when you feel bad, when you are struggling, when you're disappointed, when things are not going, you're not behaving, you're not feeling the way you wish you would or could. What are the kinds of things you say to yourself when you are struggling, when you are feeling bad? We all have these things that probably come right to the surface. It doesn't take any effort. Some version of, I should be different, possibly. How do you talk to yourself when you're struggling? The third question. This one is a yes or no answer. Did you notice a difference between the way you talk to yourself when you're struggling versus the way you talk to someone you care about when they are struggling? And then the next question is, would anything outside of you need to change to allow you to talk to yourself with that same kind of care and kindness that you offer others? Would anything outside of you need to change? So we're not going to have a chance to really talk to each other about what came up. But I can tell you, I got introduced to this practice the first time. About 100 of us were in the room. We were all people in the helping profession. And although I didn't do an official count, I would say 95% of the people in the room, men and women, helping professionals, said, yes, there is a difference between the way I talk to myself and the way I talk to people I care about when they're struggling. And so if that's true, the question becomes, what stops me? What gets in the way of me offering kindness to myself and care to myself? You know, it might be one of the things I already mentioned. That would be selfish. Or only weak people need to do that. I'll tell you what my answer was. And actually, by the time I took this training, I was able to say, honestly, there was no difference. But prior to this, and prior to 12-step recovery, and prior to all of the work and becoming conscious of the way I was lying to myself about myself, is I did not believe I deserved care. I didn't even know that I held that belief. And this, like any of the journey that we're on together in 12-step recovery, it's a process of uncovering, discovering, and discarding all the old ideas, all of the false information that we have told ourselves about ourselves. And I can tell you, I've had many opportunities to be in person with people over the years doing this work. And nobody yet has been able to come up with a barrier outside of themselves that stops them from beginning to talk to themselves with kindness and care. So it's a process. It's not going to change immediately, but it might be useful to see. In fact, I don't treat myself with the same kind of care that I offer other people. So there was your 20-minute primer on the basics of self-compassion. And now I want to get into moving into fierce self-compassion. And I have to tell you, I had some resistance for quite a while to the title of fierce self-compassion. Let's see if I can find my definitions. Because for me, fierce seemed like it just seemed like the wrong word. And I started to look, this is typical of me. I go to the dictionary and what do words mean? And fierce, if you look at the classic definition of fierce, it's like, no, that's not what I'm going for. You know, furious, unrestrained, aggressive in temperament. That's the classic definition. There's a more modern definition that has come. I don't know when it changed, but I hear the word fierce all the time now. And when I look up the definition, it does now mean heartfelt and powerful intensity, unapologetic, untamed, strong, intense. So it's still not the word I would have chosen, but it might be exactly the right word to get attention in this culture. It might be the strength of a word that we need. I'm still sticking with dynamic in my own conversations. Dynamic seems to me to be more in balance. It's continuous productive activity. It's energetic, it's forceful, it's changing. So if fierce is the word that resonates with you, but for me, when I'm using a word, I like to be clear what it is I'm intending to say. And there is a balance that's necessary between, oh, here, look, I put something in the bottom that I didn't even know was there. This would be useful for you to see too. This one I gave you way back in the beginning, just in case that's helpful. Mindful, this is how Kristen Neff defines it. Mindfulness, I'm saying awareness, common humanity, acceptance, and self-kindness is action, the way we care for ourselves. So, the idea of balance in the forms of compassion actually makes sense to me. It wasn't something that I even had thought about, but I need to have a practice that's how I care for myself internally, but I also need a practice that I take out into the world. And so self-compassion, the way she defines it, is a caring force. It's the balance between care and force. And I'm going to just hope that maybe I can find one more screen to show you. So there's she uses the terms yin and yang, whatever caring and force could be two different words that she used. Tender and fierce could be different words, but it's the balance between being aware of my own pain, understanding when I'm in pain that I'm not alone, that it's part of the human condition, and comforting and caring for myself. That's the yin part of self-compassion. And the fierce part of it is the awareness that I'm seeing clearly and speaking my truth. I'm not succumbing to what people expect. I'm not succumbing to pleasing people. I'm not succumbing to fear. I'm speaking my truth of what I'm experiencing. I know that I'm not the only person finding strength in numbers and action, drawing boundaries and protecting ourselves. It's just interesting. Last week, I was listening to a talk. I think this was Brené Brown, actually, who was doing some research on who are the most compassionate people. And her idea was that the most compassionate people would be people with some kind of a spiritual practice. And what they found, and this surprised me, was that the most compassionate people are people who have strong boundaries. That instead of trying to fit in, instead of trying to get your approval, instead of trying to please you, I put more value in my own integrity and in belonging to myself. And that requires often a boundary. There's a practice that I learned. I'm not sure if Women in Recovery, if the book group ever read Cassandra Speaks, I think that you might have along the way. And one of the practices in there is a practice. I'm going to invite you to actually, since we're all, you know, in a private space and nobody will see what you're doing, see if the energy of this helps at all. This is a way that I think of it to get that balance between that care and that force, that power. And the practice is in one hand, and I just hold my hand out in front of me. Do no harm. My intention is to do no harm. And that's a caring practice. My intention is to do no harm to myself. And my intention is to do no harm to others. And then at this opposite hand, take no shit. Do no harm, take no shit. I can feel the energy of those two. I can feel the balance in my body when I just do that gesture. And actually, I've taken this into a meditation practice because I knew as I got stronger with the do no harm to myself or others, I was still pretty weak in the setting boundaries, the taking no shit part. You know, just putting that's a clear stop. That's just right there is the message. And so I took that into my practice, my meditation practice, and eventually those two just started to dance together, that they are both necessary for our well-being. They're both necessary to protect our own heart, if you will. So this is where the whole practice got a lot more interesting for me, because then in the training on fierce self-compassion, she introduces the idea of destructive and constructive anger. And that just stopped me in my tracks, because my relationship with anger, I could not even imagine anger could be constructive. So again, which is probably the way I go about understanding things, is I started to do some research on anger. And we have something in the big book about anger. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. Well, okay, anger is a normal response. It's in the fight response. We're wired to have that experience. So to be free of it doesn't mean I never experience it. It doesn't mean it's good or bad. It just means this is what happens to people. Kristen says, and I'm not going to read all of these, but you'll see when I get to the bottom of the page what I think about anger, or what I thought about anger. I'll tell you about my journey with anger. But Kristen says, fierce self-compassion sometimes expresses itself as anger. That's the, you know, take no shit, stop, no. It's just a simple no. I mean, and anger doesn't come out in one form. It can come out, you know, on one end, it could be fury and rage, but on the other end, it could just be disturbed. So when we use the word anger, again, this conversation, I wanted, of course, to find a definition that I could just explain anger. Really, I'll just move down the page here now. Here's an interesting one. Anger is fear announced. It's often true, but not always true. Here's my journey with anger. Anger is a secondary emotion. It's the result of hurt or fear. It was an anger management workshop. I found the paper on this not that long ago, and it was back in 1998 that I took this workshop. I had heard that there was somebody, Stephen Stosny, he's still around, by the way, doing this work, who had come up with a practice that he was working with men who had been physically violent towards women. And they were given the choice of going to jail or taking his class. It's maybe kind of like the choice, you know, do you want to go to treatment or do you want to go to jail? And I was really excited about that class, and I wanted to learn about it, to tell people about it. So I found the person in Minneapolis who was sponsoring this class, and she told me all about the class. And at the end of the class, she looked at me and she said, I think you would want to take this class. And I was just shocked. It's like, wait a minute. No, I am not an angry person. Chris, almost got angry at her now that I think about it. And the reason that I was so surprised is I did not know how my anger was alive in me. I'll give you one more quote, and then I'll get to mine. 91% of emotion experts believe that anger is a primary emotion. So here we have an expert saying it's a secondary emotion, and then we have a whole bunch of people saying it's a primary emotion. I don't think it really matters. I'm not in the business of deciding that. What I am trying to understand is my own relationship with anger, and I think it's important for each of us individually to understand our own relationship with anger. So here's that last quote. Anger is dangerous. People get hurt, things get broken. That was my relationship with anger. I can remember years ago being a social worker and they were doing anger training, and I thought, well, I don't have any of that. What I didn't understand and what I got to learn really quickly in this class is that anger can either be expressed outward or it can be turned inward. And mine all just went inward. It didn't show. It wasn't safe to feel it or show it. So I just turned it in on myself. It is a normal human response. Now, we're going to get into the constructive and destructive in a moment, because sometimes it can be covering up hurt or fear, in which case it's not constructive. But as I put this list together and I gave some more thought to the subject of anger, and I'm sharing this in hopes that it might stimulate you to explore your own relationship with anger, is there's a lot of variables besides what other people think. You know, we do come into this body with a personality type, and those types, like those described in the Enneagram, for example, think that anger has a different role in our personality or in our journey here, in our spiritual journey in this body. So, you know, you might have come in with a predisposition towards an experience with anger. Anger is different within genders, and anger is certainly different within cultures. And so you might be somebody who had the experience in your life, like I did, that anger is dangerous. And I'm not going to have any of that, thank you very much. And the problem with that is you cannot not have that experience of discontent, dis-ease, discomfort, disturbance, you know, all the way out to fury or rage. And so how do I consider the possibility that anger can in fact be constructive and in fact is a necessary response to some situations? It's especially necessary as a response to protect ourselves. And Kristen does a lot of talk in the book. That's why I talked about anger. She talks about anger as a source of protecting. She talks about it as a source of providing. And she talks about it as a source of motivation. The one that makes the most sense to me, and the one that I want to spend the rest of our time looking at, is anger as a source of protecting ourselves. That when I need to draw a boundary and say, no, stop, that I'm willing to do that. That requires me to believe, I wasn't planning to share this, that I deserve care. I was so far away from believing I deserved care that when I was physically abused by my husband, some part of me thought I deserved it. That's how far away I got from the truth of who I am and who we all are. And what we all have is innate goodness. What we all have is innate value. It's not something that you have to earn. It's God-given. It's our spiritual essence. One of my favorite prayers, And I'll share it now because it's a really simple prayer and I know where I heard it. And I knew I rolled my eyes and I said, I'll never say this prayer. And now I say it all the time. And I share it with other people all the time because it's so powerful and it speaks to what I'm talking about. Loving Creator, please show me the truth about myself, no matter how beautiful it might be. If there's a continuum and knowing and experiencing myself as beautiful and believing myself unworthy and unlovable is at the other end, I was at the bottom of that continuum. 12-step recovery, the uncover, discover, discard, uncover all the things I've told myself about myself that were never true, have allowed me to move into a place where I know who I am. In my essence, not my personality, not my labels, not my gender, not my name. Who I am is one of God's kids. Who I am is a spiritual being. What we all have, and the big book is the reference for this, is we all have an unsuspected inner resource. One of the brain scientists that I like to follow says, and he says this to other scientists and they roll their eyes probably when he tells them this, is they can prove we all have innate goodness. So if one of the things that stops you from setting boundaries and protecting yourself is the lie you've been telling yourself, maybe the life experience and all of the evidence that you've gathered along the way that you didn't deserve care, it's time to begin the journey or continue the journey or strengthen the journey of removing those barriers that have stopped us from caring and loving ourselves to the degree that will allow us to freely and unconditionally care and love each other. So I'm going to put up one more screen. It shows constructive and destructive anger, and then we're going to do a short practice. I'm watching the time slip away. Maybe I'll find it. Maybe I won't. Yay! Okay, sometimes I surprise myself. Destructive anger focuses on another person rather than on what the experience is, what the threat is. It seeks to harm. When I'm seeking to harm another, I am harming myself. There are no exceptions to that. If I am harming you, I am harming myself. I'm coming out of that reactive unconscious mode. I have not created the space that allows me to choose a response. It's a defense to protect myself. Constructive anger. We focus on the threat. We seek to repair. We seek to protect. It stops me from covering up an underlying wound. Maybe there is a hurt. That's the reason I got so angry about what just happened. Is it hurt? And if I put that energy out with anger, then I've dealt with it, right? No, the hurt is still there. The feeling is still there. What happened to me is I ran out of places in my physical body to tuck away all of the lies and all of the hurt that I'd been carrying over the years. So without some practice to constructively let that energy out, what we're doing is destructive to ourselves. Our ego is not involved. I'm not judging. I am just creating the space between the stimulus and the response. I'm looking to how I can repair this situation. How can I protect myself? So I want to do a practice. I'm going to do this practice with you. And then we will be to the point of questions. I believe this practice is in the book. Fierce self-compassion. And this is an invitation. The practice is called A Fierce Friend. And so I just want to say up front, there's no way to do this wrong. It's not useful to judge your experience as you're doing it. What's useful is to just notice your experience. This is information that might be useful for us as we move forward in our own healing, as we move forward in our own journey of care. One of the quotes that Kristen says is, the reason we care for ourselves is not because it's going to cure what's wrong, but because it's when we most need care. When we're struggling, it's the time we're probably the least likely to care for ourselves. And that's the time when we most need the care. So if you want to have, if you're curious at all about this Fierce Friend meditation, this will take about 8 minutes. So I'm going to go pretty quickly. But what helps to move inward often is to either close your eyes, if that feels comfortable, or to lower your gaze. And just that will start to slow down the activity of your own mind. Maybe just notice your next breath. Here's your inhale, the gentle rising of your chest. And as you exhale, the gentle lowering of your chest. And if you can, imagine that you are in a safe and comfortable place. It might be a room with a fireplace. It might be on a beach. It might just be seated where you are right now in your own home or out in nature, but allow yourself to imagine and feel yourself to be in a safe place right now. That feeling of comfort and peace, you are safe. Soon you'll receive a visitor, a strong, powerful, but tender and loving presence, a fierce friend who embodies the quality of caring force. Let the images arise. It might be a friend, someone you know, a protective teacher, a grandparent, a warrior, a goddess, an animal. There's nothing to figure out here. Just see if an image, a person, a being will arise that represents to you the qualities of being a fierce, caring presence. Maybe it's just a feeling. Maybe it's just a light, a warmth. And now this friend has entered your safe space, this fierce friend. And you can imagine yourself where you are right now, being in the company of this brave, caring, loving presence. Just see if you can take in that feeling of what it's like to be in the presence of being loved and protected. This energy, this force, this power. Just notice your experience again without judgment. If you get distracted, just refocus your attention. This friend is wise and sees clearly and understands exactly what's going on your life journey right now. They see the areas where you need to be firm, to stand up for yourself, to draw boundaries. Your friend may want to tell you something that is just what you need to hear right now so you can protect yourself. Take a moment and listen carefully to what this wise being, this energy, might have to say. Your friend may also want to give you a gift, something that symbolizes this caring force, this power, this love. Maybe something materializes in your hand. If no words, if no gifts come, just continue to experience the strength, love, and protection. That in itself is a blessing, to allow yourself to be with that energy. Allow yourself to realize that this fierce friend is actually a part of you. All the feelings, images, words flow from your own fierce and tender heart. See if you can take that in. If we have tender, caring words to offer others, they exist within us. We know how to care. And now when you're ready, allow the image to gradually dissolve. Remember that that caring force is always within you, especially when you need it the most. And as you listen to the sound of the chime, bring your focus back into the room. Our caring force needs to be sustained and to be effective. That know, that boundary needs to also include care. Otherwise, it depletes us, it harms us. So the three A's, awareness, acceptance, action, require conscious practice. Awareness, mindfulness is the doorway in. Until I am conscious of what I'm telling myself, what I'm thinking, what I'm experiencing, I have no choice. You are wired to unconsciously react to anything that threatens you. A practice that creates a space between what you're telling yourself or what you're experiencing allows a wise response. And I like to close my part of the sharing with a poem, and then I'm open to questions. That's assuming I can find it. Here we go. This is called Unconditional by Jennifer Wellwood. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its jewel-like essence. I bow to the one who has made it so, who crafted this master game. To play it is purest delight, to honor its form, true devotion. And so the question is, how do I befriend my own anger? How do I uncover the barriers that block me from knowing that I deserve care? So Susan, I don't know if you have any questions, but I think I'm done.
Thank you, Ellie. There are some questions starting to appear in chat. One of them is, do you lead workshops on fierce self-compassion?
Well, I'm planning to in the future. With COVID, I haven't really done much of anything, but I am planning to, yes, but nothing's scheduled yet. And these workshops will only be available to women, just because that's where I want to do the work.
Wonderful. And Ellie, we can, if you're, we're planning to place your handouts that you were showing in the resources section on our website. That's great. If you'd like to, for us to post some contact information for you, we can we'd be happy to do that as well.
Thank you.
Ellie, I had a question on the constructive and destructive types of anger.
Yeah.
Would you say, I know I tend to think of, when I think of anger, kind of go to those, think about it in terms of the destructive bucket, if you will. It seems like that's the way I think about it first. This is very enlightening today to think about it in other terms. And I was wondering, do you think that, does anger necessarily like show up it in its destructive form, and then we need to work at transforming it to the constructive form? Or maybe that's not the case. And indeed, some women are just kind of, anger shows up for them as a way of, in a non-reactive way, or in a way that you described as the constructive ways.
I think, Susan, that if it's covering up something that's important for me to look at, then no matter what it does in the outer world, it's doing some harm in the inner world. And so I think it's relevant whenever anger arises to spend some time kind of looking at what was the cause of that, and was it productive, or was it covering up something? Was it covering up hurt or fear? And fear is often underneath it. And it's, you know, it might be totally necessary to protect myself as an immediate response, but then spend some time when we've calmed down to look at, is there a gift in this for me? Is there something to learn? I mean, the heading of this in her class is called The Gifts of Anger. It's like, whoa, whoever imagined that? But it's got information. All of our reactions have information for us.
Mm. Thank you. Here's another question. I'll read it out here from the chat. Do you relate your message in response to what we have been taught about sin? Can we enhance our Christianity with fierce self-compassion?
I would say I'm not the person to answer that question. I'm somebody that, for me, if I would use the word sin, it would just mean I'm off the mark. It doesn't mean anything other than I'm off the mark of how I was created to be. Mm-hmm. I can't go any further than that.
That's fair. Here's another. Trish writes, I have a hard time with the word fierce. Is it okay to use something different, like loving self-compassion?
Yes. I spent a lot of time with that word fierce. That's why I put the definitions up there. I talk to a lot of other people that are helping, you know, in the helping profession, if you will. And we went around and around with, you know, find your own word. Dynamic is the one I'm choosing now. You know, that resonates for me. I've had other ones. I can't even think of them. But yeah. And yet in this culture, in a male-dominated culture, fierce might be the right strength. But if you're using that, can I use that in a way that's not aggressive? Can I have my own modern definition of it and still use that strong word? That's the perfect question to ask, I think, of ourselves.
There really is a lot of socialization around that word, isn't there?
Yeah.
Ellie, the workbook that you mentioned at the start, and thank you, Megan, for posting that in the chat. Is that a self-guided workbook?
Yes.
Work pretty well that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can take yourself through the work. And it's more... not the right word, more. I encourage you to do it with other people. We find out we're not so different. We find out we're not the only ones that feel this way. But, you know, it's worth doing on your own if that's the way you can do it.
Thank you.
Ellie, have you read any of the books like Love Warrior or Carry On Warrior?
Have not. Would you recommend them?
I was just kind of curious. I think she's an interesting writer. She would embrace the word fierce for sure, because she embraces the word love warrior.
Well, and Kristen mentions a female warrior in the book too. I mean, we can come up with different images. It's just, you know, are we using it in a way that's destructive or constructive? I mean, that's the question. I never considered that question before. It was just like destructive. That's, I'd made up my mind, because that's the only way I had experienced it. And now I set boundaries, and that's constructive. And I don't have to rage or scream or yell, but I'm very clear and forceful. No. I'm so grateful to have had this experience. I had an emotional experience just talking with you all. So thank you.
Thank you, Ellie. We are at the top of the hour. However, we certainly have a few minutes. If there are additional questions, please feel free to voice them or place them in the chat. Here's one, Ellie. Thank you, Monique. When I find myself getting angry, there is usually something I haven't asked for. I need. But how do you practice the pause?
Well, I need portable practices for the pause. I mean, yes, some kind of a formal seated meditation or walking meditation, some kind of a formal practice. But the pause can just be this. She calls it a self-compassion break. It's the awareness that right now I'm disturbed or upset or angry, whatever word you want to put in there, the awareness, the acceptance that this is what I'm experiencing right now. Don't try and talk yourself out of it. That was my go-to. I shouldn't be feeling this, fill in the blank. And then, okay, what do I need is the question. And so just the awareness that I'm disturbed, you either think you're aware of your thoughts or you're aware of the experience in your body. Just that awareness is the doorway in. It's telling you something needs attention. And so if I cannot fight that experience I'm having, the relevant question is, what do I need right now? And if you don't get an answer on the spot, then we say, you know, I'm going to need some time to think about this, or I'm not sure what's going on right now. And we create a physical pause in the conversation or in the space. But a self-compassion break is a really portable practice. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other practices. You'll get introduced to them in that workbook. Given the time we had tonight, I just did what we could. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, last call for questions or any burning desires to share.
Can I just close this with that prayer again? Show me the truth about myself.
Yes, please. Yes.
Loving Creator, please show us the truth about ourselves, no matter how beautiful it might be.
Thank you, Ellie.
Thank you.
Let's give Ellie a round of applause. Thank you very much.